Well, it's been quite a week already, hasn't it? The government are in a lot of trouble because apparently they got it all wrong over COVID. We're going to be telling you why, because now it's time for Plank of the Week. Welcome to another sparkling edition of the world's favourite television programme, which might be a slight exaggeration, but I'm generally very, very excited to introduce to you a proper person, a proper star, a man who's never done Plank of the Week before. It is Lawrence Fox. Lawrence, very good and warm welcome to you.
Thank you, Mike. It is the greatest show on earth.
I think it is, and it's getting better every week. But I can also say that Kevin O'Sullivan joins us too for what can only be described as the first and only, so far, all-male panel. Because normally we have at least a token woman on it, but not this week.
This is our tribute to diversity.
Yes, it is.
Inclusivity.
It is.
Exactly. He's a diversity hire.
He is a diversity hire, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. Now, since you're here for the first time, Lawrence, why don't we kick off with your first nomination for Plank of the Week?
Sajid Javid.
Excellent.
Hey, always a winner.
Yeah.
He's been on before.
Has he? I mean, I thought Hancock was bad. But
yeah.
Then Sajid turns up, and he was on Radio 4, and he's sitting there going, talking about care home workers, and he goes, if they want to do this, and if they want to clean up, and they want to feed people, then they should get jabbed, or they should go and get another job. And you're like, these people wipe people's bums for
right,
a living.
For nothing.
For nothing.
For like £5 an hour or something.
The lowest, members of society that we should be really protecting. And it just shows how far we've come in 2 years that an elected official can sit there and sneer down and stamp on the necks of the poor. And I just, and especially him. Mm. I was just like, come on, mate, you're the health secretary. You should be really caring about people.
By the way, he's talking tough about care homes and he hasn't got the guts to talk tough about the NHS. So they feel safe saying you cannot work in care homes unless you've been double jabbed. But they daren't say it about the NHS because there's about 120,000 NHS staff who have refused the jab. And if they fired all of them, like they're firing people in care homes, the NHS would grind to a halt. So I wouldn't put too much store about Sajid Javid's tough talk.
And this is also the same week where the government have been accused of sending elderly residents out of hospital back to care homes where they all died, where an awful lot of them died, because they didn't care about them. So why do they care about them now?
It's appalling.
It really is.
It's just what frightens me is if 2 years ago that would have been, there would have been uproar.
Yeah.
How dare you speak about the lowest paid workers in society who do one of the hardest jobs for.
Yeah, where's the Labour Party on this, by the way?
They're off pronouncing.
I forgot to say that you're also the leader of the Reclaim Party, by the way.
Yes.
So I missed that out on the introduction, but I'm not doing it again.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Sorry. Luckily, we're not in an election period either, so we can say it without fear or favour.
We're in peacetime.
We're in peacetime, as you call it. Yeah. How's it all going, the Reclaim Party, anyway?
Yeah, it's good. Cultural jihad. Mm. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I go out there and say things that other people won't say.
Yes.
Because they're fired.
Certainly do.
They're worried about being fired.
Yes.
Because, and it's the, I think that's probably what politicians do.
I think that's what politicians do.
Have you got a cervix?
I can't.
And women, do they exist?
Can you define a woman? No.
Not yet.
I don't think so. Can we move
on? People like Keir Starmer understand the awful nature of the sexism of saying that you can't say women are people with cervixes?
I know.
It is so sexist to deny women their right to exist.
It's also kind of a ridiculous conversation. I don't want to be discussing, the internal organs that people have. I mean, why would you? It doesn't make any sense. The other thing about Sajid Javid is that this week he's already started the old, vaccination mandate scenario where he's now saying to parents, oh, by the way, because only 11%, I think, of kids have taken up the option of getting jabbed between the ages of 12 and 15. And he's going, well, of course, you might not be able to get a proper face-to-face schooling unless you get jabbed. Oh, really? We didn't care about that last year either.
Well, last week's line was you can't go to the school disco unless you get jabbed. And the point
Thank
is...
God for that. If you never enjoyed the school.
You weren't invited. If you read the papers on Sunday, they're all full of, Sunday Times, for example, has a huge piece saying, why have the vast majority of school children not been vaccinated? And it wasn't just that. All the papers had these kind of mystery pieces. What is the mystery of why so many children have not been vaccinated, not been double jabbed? And in the reasons given, nowhere could you find parental reluctance.
Right.
Yeah. That parents are not allowing their children. That's not allowed to be discussed because that is defying the state.
I think it's appalling that the state has put their hand into the family in that way, and it's just ridiculous. But my children have both been totally indoctrinated by me.
Have they?
Oh yeah.
That's always good to know.
I just indoctrinate the hell out of them because you know who knows. I've got someone contacted me the other day and said that they came in to do the schools and the parents hadn't got an email because it was an administrative error.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the fact that Brits, 9 out of 10 Brits, have finally gone, there's a line. I think we don't want to cross that line. It'll probably go up. But
I think that's right. And I think we're all surprised at how the line has actually moved to a place you never thought it would go.
No.
But at least I think finally parents have just said, well, hang on a minute, because the reason they haven't explained it to people, and when they said, oh, well, it's all right because your child might be able to give full consent after learning about it. Well, you can't give full consent because they can't tell you the answer to any question. Because if you say to them, is there a risk that I might be damaged by this? They can say no, but that's not true. And if you say, could my sort of health be damaged in the long run? They can't say because they don't know. So how can you give consent?
It's pure speculation, but I think I'm right that the reason 90% of 12 to 15-year-olds in England is 25% in Scotland. So
it's hard,
over the country, the majority of kids have not been jabbed. In Britain, in England, rather, it's the vast majority, 90%.
Right.
Much was made of the fact that kids can actually overrule their parents in terms of having the jab. But in the vast majority of cases, kids are going to go along with their parents.
Yes.
If their mum and dad said, don't get the jab, they won't get
the jab.
Well,
my kids' school made it quite clear.
And that's why 90% haven't been jabbed.
Well, my kids' school made it quite clear they would not get in the middle of that. If a child wanted to have a jab and the parents didn't, they would have a counselling session. They wouldn't take the kid's word for it, you know, because I'm quite old-fashioned when it comes to being a parent. I don't actually think my teenage children are on equal footing to me because I pay for their entire existence, and so they're going to do what I tell them.
Frankly. Yeah, well, I think that's going to be the case with most kids. Most kids, you know, respect and look up to their parents and they do what their parents say, and less so.
They worship me, literally.
So, I wouldn't go
back. The Guardian had a bit this morning, which I was reading, where they were going... It was talking about the instance of myocarditis in boys, double jab boys, which is real.
Which is significant. It's worth talking about, yeah.
And they said, one of the doctors said, yeah, well, what we might be able to do is mix it up with vaccines and or try different doses and we'll work
see
it out
how it
as
goes.
Time goes by. And
yeah,
like, okay,
great.
So it's guinea pigs.
But some of these, you know, some of these mad scientists are actually mad scientists now.
Of course
because
they are.
They're kind of going, but this is, you know how, you know, you would never have your life governed by a doctor or a medical expert. Yeah. Why are we having him doing it now? You know,
so social media is full of doctors, qualified doctors, saying there is absolutely no risk to children whatsoever from the COVID jab. How do you know?
They don't.
That's
know.
The whole point. It hasn't been able to be tested in the long term.
Or discussed. This is the problem with all of this stuff. It all boils down. It's not about so much a vaccine or anything else. It's like we're not allowed to have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
And if you shut down the conversation, then people don't trust.
Yeah.
And if they think that by smashing people and coercing and nudging, at some point, what do you do next when people won't take that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
I wonder where it's all going to go. But anyway, let's go for your first one.
My first one is along those lines, actually. My first one is, I think it's the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Jonathan Van Tam, known to his friends as Jean-Claude. he at the weekend, issued this sort of statement. So he said, because of all the lockdowns, and the social distancing we've been practicing for more than a year now. The nation.
I didn't realise we were just practicing.
practicing. We've almost got it down pat now. Yeah. Perfect. We have left ourselves with a dangerously low resistance to flu.
No.
And so now 60,000 people apparently this summer could die from the flu because our resistance is so low. So I tweeted back, well, Jonathan, thanks, Prof. Whose fault is that then?
Right.
I think it's you. You told us to keep locking down. You told us to socially distance, and now you're telling us, because we did what you said, we have left ourselves with a dangerously low resistance to a disease which is probably just as dangerous as COVID.
Right. Mm.
So these medical people are constantly giving us this advice, which shifts and changes like sand dunes, and they seem to proceed with impunity. So no one's giving him a hard time when they should do. And if you took this report today, we're recording this on the day of the parliamentary report into the COVID crisis. And everyone is going, oh, Boris Johnson, the government, they're terrible, they're terrible. And resignations must be in the pipeline. Someone's got to take the blame. That report also says that when obviously the charge is that they didn't lock down early enough. I thought generally now it was conceded that lockdowns don't work anyway.
At all.
So why did we bother anyway? But let's just take their viewpoint anyway. That we didn't lock down early enough. And the government's taking all the blame for that. This report also says that when the government did that, they were acting on the advice of Chris Whitty, Sir Patrick Vallance and Sage. So it is the medical advice that got us into this mess. And none of those medical people are taking any of the blame. It isn't our politicians that should be considering their position. It is our medical elite,
but
our
of course,
experts.
You've also fallen
gave
for
wrong advice.
You've fallen for the bear trap, though, here, because what you're being asked to believe is that there was no flu last year because everybody was wearing a mask and not going out, which, first of all, isn't true, because loads of people were going out and loads of people weren't wearing a mask. Lots of people going to work, you know, the real people of Britain, we find out, mostly, we're actually going to work. So how about maybe the people who died of flu actually died of flu last year, but they counted them as COVID? How about that?
Well, everyone was COVID. They tried to make my mum COVID. Right. They were desperate. Just before, I think that her last
That's
words,
the
her second
thing.
Last words were, don't let them make me a COVID death. I'm like, you've got all things to think about at the moment, Mum.
No, but this is the thing. But this is the thing, you know, we're sort of castigating ourselves for having so many big numbers in the COVID deaths column. But you don't even know if they should all be there. Yeah. And all that happened as a result was we got sort of branded the pariah of Europe. We couldn't go anywhere. Because every European country went, no thanks, you've got too many COVID deaths.
Well, my essential point about Jonathan Van Tam and the rest of his ilk is this. When he says, oh, we're now dangerously unresistant to the flu, at no point does he say, and this basically is our fault because we got you to lock down and socially distance for a year, so all your resistances to other conditions faded away. It's their fault.
Right.
And yet no concession to that there. So
but don't worry, because you can always get another flu.
So Jean-Claude Van Damme is definitely plank of the week.
He certainly is. Now, I'm going to go for somebody that until literally a couple of hours ago I'd never heard of. There's a woman called Sally Rooney, who's apparently quite a celebrated author. I'd never heard of her.
Normal
She's
written, People, the big normal BBC people. Three hits.
Oh, is that the show everybody watched?
Yeah. Okay. That's why it's such a successful
show. I'm so out of touch with you guys in the zeitgeist because, you know, I mean, you're formerly of the television world. I still watch Lewis.
Darling,
you know?
I still am.
That's the other thing I haven't
temporarily
mentioned.
Temporarily, I'm taking a sabbatical for my cancellation.
Lawrence would never be in a show called Normal People. No. It wouldn't fit the mould.
No, they wouldn't want you in that. But you're going to be Joe Biden's son, aren't you?
I am.
Hunter Biden.
As it were.
Forgot to put that in the intro, so I'm still not doing it.
Come on.
He's got so many strings to his bow.
The man who would be Hunter Biden.
Yeah.
Tell us about Sally Rooney.
So Sally Rooney, right, has written a new book, a second novel, is called Beautiful World. But apparently it's not a beautiful world because she thinks parts of it are not very nice at all. Now, the first book, Normal People, translated to 46 different languages, right? But she has now issued a statement in which she says that she does not want Beautiful World, Where Are You, to be translated into Hebrew. So she's refusing to sell the rights to an Israeli-owned publishing house, which wants, and I presume they did put the last book out, and suddenly she's now had a change of heart. And she claims, right, that it's because she has, for now, chosen not to sell translation rights to an Israeli-based publishing house, even though she's very proud that previous novels have been translated into Hebrew. So it's all a bit of a mixed picture, really.
But what's the actual reason that she...
What's the actual word for somebody who does that?
Well, she says...
Accusation could be... It begins with anti-Sem...
There's a word for it, isn't there?
Anti-Semitism.
It's not... Woke people
is she
are
the
really
Labour Party?
Often... Well, woke people...
Clearly.
Woke people are very interested in Israeli and Palestinian politics and tend not to be so interested in British politics.
Yes, isn't that funny? Because it says here that she was wishing to express her desire to support the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement, which is BDS.
Which is horrible.
Something like a campaign that works to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians and pressure Israel to comply with international law.
So in order to pursue that aim, she would persecute all the people of Israel who want to read her book.
Yeah. And many people who speak Hebrew...
Fair.
One
might be able to say that another word, isn't it? It begins with a R.
Yes.
Woke people are also really often that as well.
They can be. Yeah, it ends in T, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Earlier this year, she continues, the international campaign group Human Rights Watch published a report entitled "Their Threshold Crossed, Israeli Authorities and the Crimes of Apartheid and Persecution." It goes on and on and on. But then she also says that she realises that there are other parts of the world which are also not very nice, but she can't basically tackle all of them.
That's unusual.
She can't support all of them. She says, "I'm responding to a call from Palestinian civil society, including all major Palestinian trade unions and writers' unions." I imagine this woman's a millionaire, right?
Is it going to be translated into Chinese?
What, for the Uyghurs? That's a very good point. And perhaps in some of the more, shall we say, dictatorial countries of the Middle East, as well as Israel, such as Saudi Arabia, where homosexuality is outlawed, where people have their hands cut off, where women are stoned to death for adultery.
I mean, thrown off a building or crushed by a wall.
I mean, you know, why would she have it translated into those?
If you go down that route, if you start picking on countries, you're going to ban your book from a whole slew of countries.
Also, I mean, if you're part of the creative body of the world, which is, as a writer, she is, it's a bit odd, isn't it, to say, basically, effectively, my book is now banned. I'm banning my own book.
It's so arrogant, isn't it? I know more about Israeli palaces. Yeah, she's probably read half an article in The Guardian while she was writing, you know, her unboundedly talented books.
Yes.
And she's read half an article in The Guardian. She's I'm with them. Having dinner with them.
It's a massive virtue signal,
flat
isn't it?
Out virtue signal.
Well, it's not. It's just flat out begins with R and ends in M.
I mean, it is mad.
It's it's like Jeremy Corbyn. He had, as Labour leader, and still has, one foreign policy. Back Palestine, hate Israel. That's his only foreign policy. He doesn't even know where any other foreign countries are.
At least he knew that women had cervixes.
He did. And I mean, you know, he was quite fond of women as well, was Jeremy Corbyn. He was quite... But this is typical of where we now find ourselves, isn't it? You know, with a woman who is by far and away over and above, she could probably go and buy the Gaza Strip and fill them all with, you know, houses with IKEA furniture in them. But she'd rather just say, no, you can't have the book.
It's an absolutely pointless gesture, and it is virtue signalling. She's trying to advertise how wonderful she is to the world.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Anyway, so, your second nominee.
What have I got again? Oh, yes. It's either DC Comics or it's Superman himself. I can't work out...
You can't blame Superman. It must be DC.
Well, no, because... OK, Superman has been there's a new iteration of Superman.
Yes.
You know, the man we looked up to, Christopher Reeve, played him when we were kids, he was a normal bloke.
Old enough to remember the Bob Newhart sketch.
Oh, right.
You know, when Superman rings the dry cleaners to ask for his stuff back. It's very funny. It's one of those American comedians doing a one monologue kind of joke.
But that's when jokes were funny as well, back in the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, he, in his newest iteration, Superman is, for the comic book, Superman is fighting climate change.
With
everything he can, but he gets so worn out from fighting climate change that he finds love in the arms of a male photojournalist called Jay Nakamura. So that's every box ticked.
Is Jay Nakamura from Japan?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Jay Nakamura is. I don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't read a lot of the comics. I just find it. Plankish.
It is plankish.
Because it's like, it's okay to have heroes. And I think the creator turned around and said, I couldn't resist the opportunity not to include another white saviour. I'm like, well, you know, I couldn't resist the opportunity to not star in Black Panther.
Right.
It's so pointless.
Well, I was saying this earlier today, that surely if you're going to go down the woke route with Superman, you have to call him something else, don't you? How can he be Superman?
Superperson.
Well, doesn't he have to be Superperson? Or Super...
Superperson.
Super something other
but
than...
It just kills this year.
Yeah, who asked for this?
I love it.
And don't forget, this follows on from Robin becoming bisexual.
Oh, he was always bisexual.
He always had a thing for Batman.
Batman and Robin was one of the greatest and most camp things of all time.
The point is who asks for this? Yeah. You know, were Superman fans, you know, bombarding the DC Comics head office saying, for God's sake, make Superman bisexual? Yeah. They decide this unilaterally and then assume everyone's going to go, aren't you wonderful? But actually what everybody reacts is to say, aren't you pathetic?
Yeah, and because it's unnecessary, isn't it?
Well, Superman, the point of these sort of archetypal stories is that you generate children who go, okay, so ordinary people can be super.
Yeah.
It's not like LGBTQ plus, it's like you've got to have the whole list. They can be super as well, and they have to be gay, and it's like, no.
You can't do everything, can you?
I don't want to know what sexuality someone is, or what colour their skin is, or I just want to know who they are.
Yeah, I don't want to know what Superman or his son does in the bedroom. Like,
certainly
or
not with
else.
Jay Nakamura.
No, I mean, I've
never liked Jay Nakamura.
I don't know Jay Nakamura.
Got a reputation.
I don't like the cut of his jib, I never have.
He's got a reputation at the Vauxhall Tavern.
He was there the other night.
I saw you.
Yeah, it's the sort of people that go there. But this is the point, right? We have a kind of ridiculous rewriting, not only of history, but of the present going on. People are actually rewriting stuff as it's happening.
Yeah.
You know, the next thing you'll see is newspapers not being able to publish stories about something because there'll be somebody going, oh, you can't write that.
I think that's going on big time. In America, in universities, that now they're saying that marking people's papers, exam papers, is a thing of white supremacy.
Is it?
Yeah.
God, I never knew that.
Even if you're black.
Can you imagine, you know, getting up, I got a degree in engineering, that's why I designed this plane.
Well, did you see that story today about the engineering, where some woman
ingeniators.
She's now said that this is such a Ramonery thing to say, yeah. Right? She's basically said that there are so many people using the word engineer to describe what they do, and they're basically not clever enough to be called engineers, yeah. Because engineer is apparently a word which came from the word ingenious,
right.
Rather than the engine, right? So if you're a TV engineer, I'm sorry, you know, you don't matter.
You're not
you're
a proper
stupid.
Engineer.
You might have even voted for Brexit or something. Yeah. You know?
You're probably working class or something, you know, terrible sound like engineer, that, aren't
you? If you're a sound engineer, then that's not proper engineer either. So they now want to change the word and call them ingeniators.
Yeah,
why? I mean, what?
Why?
Go and have another glass of Prosecco.
Yeah, really.
Honestly, just sod off another glass of Prosecco.
I know. Exactly. It really would make a lot more sense. And then there was that school today, Loughborough.
Oh, they banned the words good and bad.
We can't call children's behaviour.
So guess what they've replaced the words with?
Yeah.
They replaced the good and bad with skillful and unskillful. There's no equivalence between good, bad, and unskillful.
Genius.
And skillful.
Also, how is bad unskillful? I mean, just because you're unskillful just means
no
you don't
equivalence.
Have to do something. It doesn't mean you're bad.
It's like, as I said to you on the radio this morning, Mike, it's the linguistic inaccuracy that annoys me from a teacher saying, no, don't use the word good, use the word skillful.
Also,
well, how does that match up?
That's deliberate. The whole
they'll have to rename that Michael Jackson album, won't they?
Yeah.
Unskillful.
Unskillful.
Doesn't really
unskillful.
Work.
I'm unskillful. I'm very, very unskillful.
Yes.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Right, what's your number two?
British Airways. It's similar to, this is to do with linguistic censorship, really. British Airways have announced that from now on, when you get on an aeroplane or you're waiting in the waiting lounge, this is your captain speaking. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen is now banned as a term.
Thank God.
You can...
Oh, it's really hurt me every time.
Yeah. Now, this is because they want the airline wants to be more diverse and inclusive.
Inclusive is the word. You've got inclusive Lego now.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I mean, you're a parent. You have stepped on Lego in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
One of the most painful things you'd ever
do. That's not an inclusive experience.
Yeah. I don't know what inclusive Lego is, I'm afraid.
Well, but I mean,
it's more expensive and pointless.
Yes.
The point about, ladies and gentlemen, is that one of the reasons they gave is want to be more inclusive, and they're worried that children may feel excluded from the ladies and gentlemen. But they also, of course...
Why?
Only because we
turn
children
idiots.
Into massive little douchebags.
But they're obviously talking about non-binary people, trans people, all of whom they say will be offended by not being included in the term ladies and gentlemen. Now, I say that none of them will be offended by this.
No, of course they won't.
You know, although British Airways obviously feel that if you're non-binary, trans or a child, you're an absolute moron, I don't think that.
No.
I don't think they will be offended by the term ladies and gentlemen. And the point about British Airways, they make this decision unilaterally. How many complaints do you think they've had from customers and passengers over the years, ever? No, I'd say
there'll be one tweet.
I'd say, well, maybe one tweet, but possibly zero.
Yeah.
They've made this decision of their own volition because somehow or other they think that is in tune with the new woke orthodoxy that they must adhere to. And, you know, know, when are we going to succeed in defeating this corporate cowardice? Yeah. This is what drives me that companies always fold about this woke nonsense. And if they could just start to stand up to it, and if companies like British Airways could realise just how pathetic,
I mean, do they really think
childish
they're gonna get more
and
passengers?
Absurd this is.
Do you think they're going to get more passengers?
No,
by
they're
going to
get fewer passengers.
Very trans. I thought that would make trans people happy.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying ladies,
you're
and
a lady,
gentlemen.
You're a gentleman, so you're, one or the other.
You're identifying it. And as far as non-binary, that just doesn't exist.
Well, it doesn't.
So it's like, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not just... if my children are offended by that, I have a clip around the ear.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's got to be done. You'll get the social services round as well as everybody else that's turned up at your house, right?
I'll have a COVID mask. I'll be being held by a policeman.
I was telling Mike this morning.
Excuse
on
me,
show,
Mr.
When,
Fox.
And this
you've
is not a lie. When I was at school, we didn't necessarily need the words you've been good or bad because we knew when we'd be bad because the teachers would hit us.
Yeah.
Quite hard, I remember.
Yeah, we had a guy who used to walk past us behind our heads, look over our seat, and just smack us with books.
Yes.
We had several great sort of things
and traditions at school. We had a discipline master who was called Mr. Bloomline. He used to take you up to the top of the school and beat you with a slipper.
Nice.
And then there was another guy who used to call him Psycho, who was an English teacher. He used to grab you around the throat and just put you up against the wall. And then they'd throw dusters at you. Yeah. You know, it was great. Really enjoyed it.
Good old days.
Fantastic.
The last time I got the cane, I was 17 years old. I was in
Singapore.
This headmaster, I won't name
she
him.
She was cold.
He was running at me, and you know, just giving me as hard as he could. And I got quite hurt. But
it
I was 17,
hurt.
And after the third one, he was giving me six of the best. I turned around and said, "I'm 17. Why are you doing this?"
Yeah, this is giving me a bit of a strange feeling.
No, I think the not smacking kids woke thing is quite good.
I don't think you should smack kids.
Yeah, you should give kids kids should not be offended. You know, my eldest son does often say, "No offence, but..."
Yes.
He does say, yeah. And I think it's very polite of him. He's not
I think that's fine. I think you raise an important point. You have polite children. They should also be polite, but they should also stand up for themselves. Yeah. And they should stand up for other kids who are being bullied, and you should be taught, you
they're
know,
not
values.
Being bullied,
and
you shouldn't hit
kids, but you should certainly be able to say what you did there is good and what you did there is bad. You should be able to say that.
And you should be able to look at them like that.
Yeah, that's
and
what
they should know
do.
Immediately yes. to stop
exactly,
doing whatever
exactly,
piece of
exactly.
hellery that yes. the children are up to
exactly.
all the time.
Anyway, British Airways definitely.
Well, I've just realised, right, that I'm going on a rather sort of literary bent today because I'm going to now go for Sebastian Faulks, best-selling author.
Birdsong,
yeah. Which is a great book, I have to say.
Oh, he's
a
brilliant writer, Sebastian.
I read it while one of my children was being born, and so there was like, you know, the labour pains going on
then.
Over there. Well, I was just sitting there for ages and ages and ages, and it was, you know...
It's a boy.
Your child's coming out. Not now.
The birth was actually more horrendous than the book, because it was quite graphic.
It's a great
you know,
book.
It is a great
he's a great writer.
Well, he is a great writer, but you know what he's now decided?
He's now decided
that he's not any longer going to describe the physical appearance of women in any of his books, because he thinks that in some way that's not the right thing to do. Now,
he fears
he's a writer.
Cancel culture. He fears.
Yeah.
In the past, he has written descriptions of women and been accused of being a sexist and being told, "You have no right to describe women because you don't know what it is
but he's
to
a
be
writer.
A woman." I know.
That stay in your laneism stuff is dreadful for literature and art.
Yeah.
And all of it. It's like, it's crap.
Well, his new book is called Snow Country, and he's got a woman called Lena, apparently, in it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't describe what she looks like.
He says it's liberating. I say it's an abrogation
the Lena
of your
I know
duty
is,
as a novelist. You have to describe what things and what people... places look like. That's part of your job.
Well,
he says
of a novel.
But you know,
he's not liberated. He is intimidated by the cancel culture woke mob who have been.
Yeah,
after
but he's
him
now
before.
Actually saying that he's going to leave it to the readers to decide.
I know.
Why doesn't
but
he just
why.
Release a book of 100 blank pages then?
Or just fill in the blanks, maybe. You
well,
know,
he,
like
he
get to the really exciting bit of the chapter.
The character
yeah.
leader.
And then
it's like
a couple of pages you just write yourself.
Well, it's like this kid's book where it goes, if you want Danny to go into the haunted house, go to page 271.
Yeah. Well, isn't it like they used to
that.
Do three or four different endings for movies
yeah.
and then test them in the cinemas to see which one they liked better? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's mad.
But he says that this character, Lena, is being pursued by two men. So he says it's inherent in that situation that she must be terribly attractive.
Not necessarily.
Well, not necessarily.
Well, you see, this is the only... He's going to get himself
three legs.
He's going to get himself, into even more trouble then, because as you can't try and explain that why you haven't described her because she's too attractive, then you're already doing it anyway, aren't you?
But he's 68 years old. In some ways, cut him some slack. He probably just doesn't want any more hassle.
Well, maybe he shouldn't write any more books.
But he's intimidated by the cancel culture mob.
I mean, even Dawn French has said he's an idiot.
Even Dawn French.
You know, and she's quite a sensible woman.
I mean, and when we're talking about great writers, of course, Dawn French has to be right up there.
How about this one? It's a better one for you then. Booker Prize winner Bernardine Evaristo.
She says it's ridiculous.
She says it is ridiculous that you can't, to ask people to reinvent their imagination.
Yeah, because that's why books are often better than films.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing your own film in your head.
Exactly.
I mean, D.H. Lawrence spent about three chapters saying why he fancied Miriam and Lady Chatterley.
Yeah. When I read, Tessa the Durbervilles, I knew exactly what she looked like,
But that's like, I mean, part of the fun of reading a book for me is when
it's turned into the South Bank
when a novelist describes something, you form a picture in your own mind, don't you?
You do.
If he's not going to give you any pointers, then it becomes a hopeless book, doesn't it?
It's not going to give any pointers.
I won't be reading it either. Who's your third one?
Charlie. Prince Charles.
Prince Charles, yes.
Prince Charles for saying that he's sympathetic to the insulate Britain people who don't actually insulate their own houses, but they sit on the road. And he talks about sustainable... He's got a sustainable clothing line, Prince Charles. You know this,
and he's got a sustainable
car. What do they call it? What's his estate called?
The Duchy...
No, the Duchy of Cornwall.
He's got all of it. He says Build Back Better a lot, doesn't he? Yeah. Which it makes I lose a year of my life every time anyone says.
You're going to be dead pretty soon.
I know, I'm going to be dead in next week.
I hate that phrase. I really do.
He's just, it's the fact that he's converted his car to run on cheese and wine.
I don't believe that.
It's his Aston Martin, which he's had for about 30 years. And you can only convert your car to run on, it's actually sort of vegetable waste and wine and cheese. You can only do it if you've got a spare $300,000
for your engine. Imagine his butler sat there going, oh, I'd love cheese and wine, and Charlie's going, don't worry.
Put it in the car.
Any particular kind of cheese.
Drive me over to the M25.
Is it a Wensleydale or, Stilton? Creamy?
But he sympathises with them, doesn't he?
He'd be more useful to this nation sat on the motorway.
Actually, if Prince Charles glued himself to something, I'd be in favour of that.
Yeah, I would too.
Preferably something that moves.
Yeah. So that's Camilla out of the picture then. He says about Insulate Britain, he said, I really, really totally understand why these young people are so motivated about climate.
They're not young.
They're 90,
You see that story today about the woman who's apparently vowed to unleash hell on drivers.
Her husband
works for TfL, Transport for London. Although, to be fair, as I said, he probably creates more traffic jams than she does. He's running our road system.
And also the other one, he popped around the world on the round-the-world trip to Canada.
Oh, yes.
And driven hundreds of miles.
She's the one that doesn't have an electric car because she can't afford one. Yeah. So she's got a diesel car. To drive her kids to school.
They're so easy.
Which is fine, but don't tell us what to do then.
Every day though, there's a new spokesman, isn't there? There's a guy called Liam Norton. They should really He's the one who said, I don't really care about insulation.
He said, that's not the point, whether I've insulated my home.
No.
I'm like, well, it sort of is.
It's kind of a Bible story
about it.
Why don't you care about insulation? He said, because I'm a hypocrite. You're a great spokesman. You really are.
These guys are obviously quite enjoying their moment in the sunshine. A bit like Messrs. Witty and Vance.
There's no doubt they love nothing more than to be interviewed. But I think these Insulate Britain people, there's no doubt we're talking about a small number of people, all of whom have psychological problems.
Yeah.
They are imbued with a sense of their own saintly piety. Mm. And that they looked at... I mean, I've had a couple of them on my show, and they talk to you in pitying terms. You don't understand the truth. So, the thing is, I do. you don't. And there's nothing worse than absolute certitude. Yeah. Absolute certitude is a sign of psychological deficiency.
Moral supremacy.
This woman,
doomsday
right?
cultists.
Yes, apparently that's what they are. Anti-modernists. Yeah.
She's a Cambridge philosophy graduate. Yeah. And this is the thing, right? There are always people that don't have to go to work, right?
So thank God I didn't go to university.
I know. Hubby at TfL is probably on a nice
170,000 pounds.
There you go. So she is one of Britain's apparently most prolific climate activists. Has been arrested on several occasions, including twice in London protesting for Extinction Rebellion, where she glued herself to a hotel and the DLR train. So they should have definitely set the train moving.
Always.
Because you know when it comes into the tunnel just before bank, then you're going to be, you know.
It's the two-tiered policing of this stuff as well. Yeah. You know, that's what gets you. And they're all sat there with their little vegan arms hammering at that. that building, and the police just stood there.
Standing there going, yep, we're watching you.
The two worst incidents were the WPC asking them if they're all very comfortable.
Are you all right?
Anything we could do, in a nice way.
Yeah. And like a vegan sausage roll.
Almost worse than that was there was one moment where, in the early stages of their road blocking, where they were trying to block an access road to the M25, and the traffic was so intense that they couldn't actually get on to the... They literally could not find a moment to do it. So a copper went out and stopped the traffic for them so they could get onto the road and stop it. It's unbelievable. And as you say, Lawrence, this is because if you protest against lockdowns or you're an anti-vaxxer, they have you clap you in irons within seconds.
Oh, yeah.
If you protest about climate change...
They're punching you to the ground.
Right ahead.
It's the new... They've squeezed COVID as much as they can now. You know, they've squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, and now they go, right, what? How next are we going to tax them? Other people and ruin them their lives.
I know. It's just absolutely unbelievable. So who's your number three?
My number three is incredibly, she's still the Met police chief. She's still got the job.
Yeah.
Now,
well, but you know why? Because they haven't got anybody else to give it to. That's what they keep saying.
I don't buy
it. We've got nobody else.
I don't buy it. My theory is that the reason she kept her job, I know for a fact that Priti Patel was extremely keen on ending her tenure in charge of the most important...
Yeah, but Priti Patel's also extremely keen on ending the arrival of many, many thousands of immigrants from France
the point is,
on the beaches.
Well, the point is, though, that Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, has more power in the appointing of the Met police chief than the Home Secretary.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, she wanted to get rid of him, but Khan wanted to keep Cressida Dick because Cressida Dick does the woke policing that he likes, the Insulate Britain lot. So, anyway, the point is that Cressida Dick... She was in charge of the Met Police when the disgusting, sordid, vile Wayne Cousins saga unfolded. Wayne Cousins was a serving police officer running horrible WhatsApp groups full of racism, homophobia, pornography. He was flashing around left, right and centre and all his mates called him the rapist because he made women so uncomfortable.
So this
it's not just about him. This is about toxic cop culture that thrived under the leadership of Cressida Dick.
Well, hundreds of police officers.
So this is the woman who has presided over this series of catastrophes for many years, and now we're being told, all public trust in the police has gone, particularly among women. Women do not feel safe under the streets. This is all the fault of Cressida Dick. And what is the authorities, what is their response to this? Oh, we'll give her another 2 years.
Yeah.
You cannot restore confidence in the police with the same loser leader in charge.
Of course you can't.
She has to go.
She does have to go.
But her boss, though, you know...
Well, funnily enough, it brings us nicely onto my third nomination, which is Sadiq Khan.
Did he mention his dad was a bus driver?
No, but he has done.
Sajid Javid and Sadiq Khan get together to argue about whose dad was a better bus driver.
Yeah.
My dad was a bus driver.
Well, I'm putting him in as plank this week, not because of anything like that, but because he's already cancelled this year's fireworks display for New Year's Eve, right? Just today, just before we started this show. Now, last year they didn't do it because we were under lockdown. Do you remember? They locked everything down on December the 18th, I think it was. But there's no reason to lock it down now because there's no real suggestion that COVID is coming back. Right?
Maybe the guy that made the European flag fireworks is busy that day.
Oh, could
be. Or the guy who made the Black Lives Matter fist is busy that week.
That's possible.
You know, you never know.
He does say, because they did it last year. It was kind of cheek by jowl with the proper firework display. They basically told everybody not to show up. And one of the things they said, I think, was if you do show up, you'll be arrested. So you'll be arrested for going to watch some fireworks now on New Year's Eve, because that's not what you should be doing.
Don't have fun.
You shouldn't be having any fun, like with other people. Also, as somebody pointed out, 100,000 people would normally be watching it on the embankment in the open air. He's just come back from Labour Party conference where he was singing and, you know, in nightclubs without a mask on. I'm glad he wasn't wearing a mask, but, you know, how does that mean he now stops people from being outside watching a firework display?
Because he's an elite and we're the little plebs that the elites boss around.
And last year, I seem to remember, did they not do so? Because I remember it took me by surprise because we weren't expecting it. And then suddenly there was some kind of display, which I think was virtual, or at least it wasn't real fireworks or something, I don't know. But they did something, didn't they, over the river, but nobody was there to see it because they'd warned them all off.
This is the mayor of, you know, one of the world's great cities, our capital city, who, on the day that it was revealed that there'd been an unprecedented number of stabbings and shootings and killings in the capital, and on the day that Wayne Cousins was sentenced and the true horror of his story emerged, the mayor of London stood up and said, my main priority is climate change.
Right. And he tweeted, like, 2 seconds after that stabbing. I met those. Here's a real annoyed me about, and it was really upsetting when I did the mayoral thing, because I took it really seriously. Yeah. And I went to meet people who'd been stabbed and who'd parents of both, stabbers, murderers and murderees. Mm. And the one thing you'd expect your mayor to do of a city is the minute someone is stabbed and killed, a young person is stabbed and killed on the streets, get in your bloody car, get over there and start saying, say, what can I do to help? Right. That's what you do. But he doesn't. He's got his... No, it's raining.
Climate change.
Clouds. Clouds don't stab change. People. People do.
He made a speech saying you don't realise how jealous Paris is of London because of all the work we do on climate change. You know, we're all residents of London. I don't want you to do any work on climate change.
No, thanks
anyway.
It's
not a city chief's job to worry about climate change. That's a prime minister's job.
Yeah.
You know, why is he taking on this mantle? Because it's
easy.
Because
he wants to be the next Labour leader.
Well, he does. Yeah. Well, we've reached that point now. Because this is when we decide who is going to win Plank of the Week. Now we've got to choose 3 out of the 9 that we've nominated, so we have to narrow it all down to 1. So what we do here is, Kevin, why don't you choose the best one that you like from Lawrence's?
OK, so Lawrence has to reel off
and then he can choose mine.
So I was Sajid Javid, Prince Charles or Superman, the bisexual.
Because I'm so sick of the saturation point we've reached with climate change, that everybody's droning on about it all the time. And I don't think that the royal obsession with it helps at all. William's almost as bad as Charles. I'm going to say Prince Charles for having the temerity to state that he sympathises with Insulate Britain.
Yeah. An organisation, by the way, which almost nobody sympathises with. I don't think anybody does. I mean, they've managed to be the world's most unpopular pressure group. Nobody wants them. Nobody likes them. And one of them's going to probably get quite badly injured if they don't stop.
Yeah.
I just thought it was unwise for Prince Charles to say that. And it's such an easy bandwagon.
But it reminds us as well.
People to jump.
It also reminds us that he's still a bit of an old eccentric and maybe he shouldn't be put in charge of the country.
Well, yeah, let's skip a generation, shall we?
Right, now, so my three were Sally Rooney, Sebastian Fawkes and Sadiq Khan.
Oh, it's
I don't want to let you... I don't want your political bent to come in on this.
No, I'll leave Sadiq. Everyone knows how I feel about Sadiq.
I mean, he's quite high up the plank of the year list.
He's a massive plank. But I'll put Sally Rooney on it.
Yes.
Because I think that it's appalling to single out people based on an ethnic origin or a national identity as to whether they can and can't read a book. I believe that there's a word for that that people are afraid to use and they often misuse.
Yes, I think that's very true. So, Kevin.
Mine were Jonathan Van Tam, Deputy Chief Medical Officer, British Airways, and Cressida Dick.
Yes. That's quite tough as well, isn't it? I think because this is the week of the COVID report, it sort of has to be Jonathan Van Tam, doesn't it?
I'll take him. He rather likes being on telly as well.
Oh, he loves it.
But this is the thing with all of them. I mean, they've all become these kind of characters. Like, the thing that used to really annoy me is you'd get these Sage people you'd never heard of, and they'd be introduced on some radio show, and this is so-and-so from Sage, but they're speaking to us in a personal capacity. And you're going, well, why are you on then? Either on as a member of Sage or you're on as some bozo that nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, you're not a personality. You're a member of Sage.
It's like Fauci. He's never off the telly.
Yeah, he loves it, doesn't he?
He loves it.
Tell us a bit about, before we let you go, Lawrence, because we're very delighted to have you here, tell us a bit about the Hunter Biden movie.
Yes, so I'm taking a sabbatical from being my cancellation. I imagine it will only be a very short sabbatical because yes. I don't showbiz is
I don't think Hollywood's going to be looking for you anytime soon.
No, I don't think they like me anymore. So it's basically just what happened. It's a surreal comedy, and it's only a surreal comedy because of what happened.
Yeah.
What he got involved in. How did Joe, on his little senator's salary, manage to accumulate so much money? 10 for the big guy.
Yeah. And also, I mean, are you able to do the story well without having to worry about legal issues? I know in America it's not quite so bad as it is here.
I think that was one of my first questions. I was like, who's going to release this?
Right.
So we'll have to see.
Yes, interesting. Well, when do you start filming?
I'm going to go next Friday, okay. And then they will do it in record speed because it's just a little independent movie.
Right. Okay. Straight to I used to say straight to DVD. But
well, I imagine
it doesn't matter now.
Imagine there's 77 million Americans who will quite want to watch it.
I think there will be.
Do you know what I mean?
You should get like an old friend of mine and both of us, Martin Dunn. Remember, he got a dollar. He got appointed editor of the New York Daily News, and he got a deal where he got a dollar for every extra copy he added on.
Really?
So you should do that. A dollar for every film you sell.
I hope he's wise.
77 million later.
I don't have an agent anymore because my agent sacked me as
well. They sacked you as well.
Yeah.
So you can find somebody. Anyway, listen, who are we going to put in? So we've got Prince Charles, Jonathan Van Tam, and Sally Rooney. We have to pick the winner.
We should be inclusive.
Yes.
So it should be a female.
Yes. I think that's true.
It should be equitable and diverse.
Yes.
Equitable. So if
we She's diverse. Irish, Sally Rooney.
Well, there you go.
So there you go.
I'm
happy with that.
One for the team. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a very timely one. And, I mean, I'll let you guys work out whether Prince... I think Prince Charles for number two, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah.
Member of the royal family. And then Jonathan Van Tam, member of the government scientific advisory
team. Member of the medical elite who keep giving us wrong advice.
Yeah. Yes.
And then blame it on us when it all goes wrong.
It's your fault.
Yeah, it's your children's fault. Yeah.
I look forward to his next apology, which he's not going to make.
Killing your grandmothers.
Yeah.
Just say killing the grandmothers and everything will be fine.
Yeah. Kevin O'Sullivan, Lawrence Fox, thank you very much indeed. So, what we can tell you is Sally Rooney, renowned author, winner of various literary prizes, now... Plank of the Week. Well done.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.